Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, today it's going to be a little bit different because we're going to have some spooky power. Yes, but with it, you're going to find that there is some absolutely amazing history about a fabulous country, Scotland. But we are going to be talking with a lady who has had personal experience and has done a lot of in-depth research, not just into the culture of Scotland and its wonderful, wonderful people, but also its spooky ghosts, yes. These energies that just will not go away and create this wonderful, wonderful, ethereal, mystical environment that just seems to keep the country of Scotland in an aura of mystery and fascination that captures the imagination and actually even your heart. I want to welcome to the show Ashley Rooney. We're going to be talking about her book, Scottish Ghosts. And on the cover of her book is this humongous, and that's a Donna word, a humongous castle. And I just look at that and my back aches when I think of the people that had to build it. I just go, good grief. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you very much. It's nice to be back.
Well, Ashley, you know, you have done so many books on various aspects of ghost legends. You've been to London, you've been to places in the United States like Cambridge, but you're a woman that has also got an extensive background in architecture, design, and you've even written one novel. But your passion seems to be with the unusual, the historical, and blending them together, along with photographs, in a very, very special way. Why do you think this has become such a joy for you to be involved with?
You know, I think it's because many of us love history. I mean, why are historical romances so popular?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, ghost stories are a way of making history quite alive. They're perfectly wonderful for kids who are not quite sure whether they'd like to read or not, but they like ghosts. Kids always like ghosts. So it's a way of getting history into them along with literature and understanding of how other people live. For those of us who really believe that there is another world, we come from roots, and these roots come alive in us. Ghost stories are something that you can look back on and think, yeah, maybe that's really true, and maybe that really all happened. I look at some of these stories, and I think people still believe them to this day. One of the mm-hmm. places we visited was this lovely castle out in the Isle of Skye. And years ago, they were visited by the fairies, centuries, obviously. And the fairies left this little piece of cloth, goes the legend around it. And that cloth came with it a history, and that the family could use that cloth three times to fight off their enemies. The last time that cloth was brought out by the family was during World War II, when all their sons went out to fight. And they were pilots, and they each brought a picture of that cloth in their pockets. And they all survived the battle for England that went on for so long and it killed so many young English and Scottish pilots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a belief there and
yes.
that you think, oh, that's wonderful. And maybe that alone kept them alive.
It's a fascinating phenomena. When you go back through history, every culture has its ghosts, its spirits. And many, many times, you mentioned children. The stories that were taught to children, in a way, were often manipulated so that they'd behave themselves
right.
and think before they did something. But there often are these stories that have a moral behind them. They have a lesson, an education. I don't care what culture you go into, you're going to find it. You're always going to find a devil in one form or another. You're always going to find a saint in one form or another, and everything that goes in between. And the stories of life's challenges are always costumed with different environments of display, of scenery, of whatever is applicable at the time. But these old, old legends that have an essence all of their own, that have survived centuries, even though they may have been adapted in the different environments, I agree with you. I think that there is that belief system that is passed along. And the highlands and the lowlands, one of the things I love about this book is that you give this marvelous history about Scotland. And Scotland, not unlike the Irish, and this is just my observation, and you can correct me, but I find that there's a sense of sadness that underlies so much. There's a sensitivity. It's almost as if tragedy has played out so often and frequently in their history. It's just like Russia. It's carried in the soul of its people. Would you agree with that or not?
I totally agree. I'm finishing up a book on Irish ghosts, and I think the one difference between the two, they both have their problems with England, is the Irish are still angry, while the Scots have accepted their fate. And you see that in a lot of Scottish people that I've met here. So many have immigrated. We always talk about the Irish immigration. I live in Massachusetts, and we have many, many Irish. But there are many Scottish who came here, who were forced here by the English after the Battle of Culloden, after the sheep and all the horrible things that happened to them, where they had to give up life in a country that they knew and loved to come here. And they have brought their strength and their values to this country. And one of the ways they pass it through, I think, and your point about morality is very interesting, and I agree with that, is through these stories that you remember them. And I meet a Scottish person, and I say, oh, I went to this castle, and they all immediately come out with a story about it. It's amazing.
It is so sad when you think of it. I participated in a Renaissance fair for the last 3 weekends. It's held here in Washington the first 3 weekends of August. This has been going on for years. And, of course, part of the magic are the people that will come dressed in costumes. And there are so many of the men, especially, because the Scots were this warrior-like people. Let's face it. Scotland was not unlike many areas of the state of Washington. It was cold. It was wet. It had rugged weather. And it had, you know, the long, dark nights. And they didn't have 7-Elevens on every corner where you could go grocery shopping and growing crops and taking care of animals and all of these things. It was a hard life. It was a very, very difficult life. And they were a people of such spirit. I mean, you had that kind of hard life, you had to be tough to survive it. I mean, there was no what I call waffling willies that lasted long. It just wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to be tolerated. And when I think of the people that dress up in that, and they're very proud of their Scottish history, which they have a right to be, and I've got some Scott in me, I think, somewhere along the line. Somebody said hello or whatever to somebody. Anyhow, I look at that, and I think, what a wonderful legacy you've got. But the myth, and these people are living in America, they really relish telling these stories that they have become familiar with because of their study of history. They love it. And the people that come to the event, I mean, these people are playing out certain roles. It is so much fun. The public is just fascinated with it. But they had this warrior aristocracy. Tell us about this aristocracy, because it prevailed for a long time.
Right. And, of course, Scotland was split. It had the two sides, the lowlands, who kind of went along with the English. Of course, they had to. They were closer to England. And the Highlands, which really was the clan life, and it was a much rougher life. And the clans, what I could read about it, The Highlands are one of the most deserted areas in the world still.
Oh, wow.
People don't, they never regain their population after the Battle of Culloden. People just left or were forced out. And it was the end. And that is, you know, you think, oh, we all saw, you know, Braveheart and, you know, cheered on William Wallace and stuff. But the battles continued mercilessly for a long time there until they finally gave in.
Yeah, well, the British were very, very systematic about how they were going to destroy the backbone of the Scots.
Right.
And they had the attitude of the conquerors, and they did that. And they did the same thing with the Irish. Now, with the Irish, they starved them. And with the Scots, they just went out because they were just such a determined people that some of the stories in here just blew me away. I had no idea that that had been to that level. But this is history, and I think it's important to understand history. But let's talk about some ghosts. Because this is just so much fun. You have a segment on how to attract your man. And this just made me laugh. Because I think every generation goes through this, male, female. Well, we're talking about the women right now. How do you attract the man? Because there, you know, there was a limited amount, believe it or not, for those of you listening. And they didn't have the population like we've got today. And women were stranded. And they couldn't travel from one point to another easily. They didn't have an internet. They lived in a very confined environment. And so life was not very long then. The average life of women, when you go back in history, many of them died. You know, they were having babies when they were in their teens because they got married off in their early teens, and they'd have babies, they'd die in childbirth. So those that remained, and then men would succumb to illnesses. They didn't live very long either. If someone lived past 30, they were fortunate.
I have an ancestor who had 5 wives.
Well,
he had an awful lot of kids. You're right. You're absolutely right when you talk about
that. Over 50% of the children died.
Yeah.
They didn't survive. I mean, a child death was just phenomenal. And it was just really something that you've got to talk about, Lady Jean Drummond.
Oh.
And I love this story, so you've got to share that.
Okay, but the one thing I would add into the difficulties of the women, of anybody that was days, and particularly the women, because they couldn't just go out, was there was great class differences.
Yes.
So you could not fall in love with the wrong man.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the same problems, as you pointed out, that we do today. Now, Lady Jean Drummond of Newton Castle, she was very smitten with a Lord Ronald, who he flirted with her, but he always looked for another, and she was just so fed up with the situation. Jean talked with her friend about what she should do. "I feel so ugly compared to her," Jean wailed. "Well," retorted her friend, "you know what they say, true beauty resides within you." "See, you agree with me," Jean snapped, stamping her foot. "It's true that I am ugly." "Well, you know, she's gorgeous. You have to concentrate on being more interesting." "I need more than inner beauty to get his interest." "Well, you could smile more often. Sometimes you look so mean." So Jean tried smiling more often, but she still didn't get Ronald's attention. She brought new dresses in bright blues and reds and wore shoes with fine silver buckles. She put jewels in her hair and perfume behind her ears. Nothing worked. Totally depressed, she stopped smiling, wore her tattered, faded dress, and began spending her time singing sad songs of unrequited love while sitting alone in the castle tower. Finally, her mother complained about her constant singing. She said, "If you want him so much, you must figure out how to win him." "But I've done everything possible," Jean wailed. "Think again, dear." "I've tried almost everything except for some magic," thought Jean. So Lady Jean went to the local witch, who told her that her fine clothes were no good and that she must dress in witching cloth of green. To accomplish this, she said, Jean needed to cut grass from a churchyard, take a branch of a rowan tree, which is our ash tree, from the gallows know, and bind the grass with a plaited reed. Then as darkness fell, she was to take this to the stone by the cobble pool and to sit there and wait. Obediently, Jean followed the witch's commands. And after waiting for a long time, Lady Jean heard the sound of laughter and a strange sensation, as if something was pulling at her clothes. She fell asleep. When she awakened at dawn, she found herself dressed all in green. The witch's advice worked. The next time Jean saw Lord Ronald, he couldn't keep his eyes off of her. Wherever she went, he was there, staring at her, totally enraptured. Soon Lady Jean was planning her wedding ceremony and counting her bridesmaids. Of course she would wear the witching cloth. That was her good luck cloth. When she walked down the aisle to her husband-to-be, she roused the magic, long asleep in the stillness. Her breath began coming in shallow gasps. Her hands became like ice. And as she kissed her husband, she felt perspiration forming on her forehead. A little trail of spittle dribbled from her mouth. Her eyes glazed over, and she fell to the ground, dead. No one knows why she died, but she did. Lady Jean was buried nearby, and her gravestone is said to turn around 3 times each Halloween. And from the tower of Newton Castle, you can hear the sound of her mournful singing. She had lost her man after all.
What a great story to tell to a gal that's saying, look, try something else.
Go find yourself a witch.
Don't do that.
Find a witch.
Find another guy. Focus on somebody else.
Yeah, that's right.
So I just think it is, you know, it's amazing. But when you think about the time frames, and I really think that so few people today, unless they have been over in Scotland or they have been in what I'd call an isolated environment, we take so much for granted. And we think, you know, look at the horrific wars that have been going on around the world and the technology as it has evolved. We've gotten to a point where we can obliterate something in a matter of seconds due to technology, which is distressing. But at the time that of history and these ghosts and the various aspects of the historical framework that you're working in, when war went on, it didn't go on for just a couple of weeks. It went on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wave, and it took months. It sometimes took a year to prepare for battle or what have you. And you just have so many interesting points of information. And when you look at that time frame, in that time frame, what it was like, anybody that ever says they want the good old days, you're nuts. It doesn't, I mean, it's just, it's horrific, really, in my view, when I look at it and I think of how the people survived what they did. Now, you have a wonderful story in here about a lady, Janet Douglas.
Oh.
And you bring out a point in your story about a lady, Janet Douglas, about the beggars who had terrorized the countryside. This is under James V. They were forced to get licenses if they wanted to continue begging. And it just made me think, this is really something. The governments back then, they were gonna make you, it's a form of taxation. If you're going to beg, you have to pay.
Right.
It's okay. You go ahead and beg, but we're going to get a piece of the action. I went, oh, good Lord, nothing has changed. I mean,
right,
you're in water.
Right.
You on water runoff. So, yes. I mean, this is just, I love this, all of this stuff, because people seem to think that what we are experiencing now is, gee, this is a big deal. Let me tell you, it's gone on in different ways for a long time. But
oh, yeah.
Lady Janet Douglas.
What a sad lady.
Yeah, it's a sad lady. And a lot of these stories are sad. But the one story that you had in here, it wasn't, is about Lady Elizabeth Bowes Lyon.
Oh, yeah.
And the gypsy. This is a fascinating story. Tell us about her.
Okay. Can I back up a little bit, though? Because
okay.
This all comes from one castle.
Oh,
all these
all right.
ghosts, the ghosts of Glamis, and the Glamis is a phenomenal castle, and we did go through it, and we did talk to guides and everything else, and there are many ghost stories in this book that come from Glamis, which anybody can tour these days. And Janet Douglas was one of the ancient ancestors, and she was persecuted by one of the kings and died in the fire. And when you go into the chapel of Glamis Castle, if you're careful, you can see her shadow praying over in one of the pews.
Ooh.
Oh, so, I mean, there are many, many castles. There's also a room about the devil, and there's somebody else. The happy one was, though, Lady Elizabeth Bowes Lyon, who is the mother of today's Queen Elizabeth II. She was playing with her sister under the gateway to the park of Glamis Castle, and a gypsy caravan came by. And in Scotland and Ireland and so forth, I've run into those gypsy caravans. They're around. And the two little girls offered their pennies to have their fortunes told. And one gypsy woman took the hand of a young Elizabeth, and she looked at her and she said, "Oh, you are going to live to be a queen and the mother of a queen." And from then on, Elizabeth Bowes Lyon, who was just a noble lady, she wasn't anybody particularly important at that point, pretended she was a princess, and eventually she grew up to marry George, Duke of York, the second son of King George V, who, if you remember, became the king when his brother Edward abdicated. So it was pure happenstance that she became the queen and the mother of Elizabeth II. That's a case of, you know, all this foretelling that you have in these ghost stories, where they foretell things that are going to happen. What got me about this particular castle, when it's so riddled with ghosts, and some of them are just really awful, some of them I could go back and find a little bit more about. Can I tell you about the Wicked Earl?
Yes, let's do that. We got to get a guy in here somewhere.
Okay, you got to have a guy in there. Because
absolutely,
the Scots have this big fascination with the devil. According to them, the devil visits the land of the living quite frequently, you know, tempting the virtuous and tormenting the indecisive. And the story of Beardy of Glamis Castle, and he was one of these relatives way, way back, is just one of the many legends revolving around the devil that takes place in Scottish history. And this, the Earl Beardy, was a really nasty man. And he did things to his servants. He, you know, cut off their noses if he didn't like them, and he cut off their hands, and he did all sorts of things. But he was a damn good card player. And we all know the devil likes nothing better than to pit his wits against the mere humans. And we saw this room, by the way. And one Saturday night in the anteroom of what is now the hunting room in Glamis Castle, another Earl, the Earl of Crawford, and Earl Beardy were playing cards. And a servant came to remind them that it was getting late and tomorrow was the Sabbath. And all Scots are good Presbyterians, and they really respect the Sabbath. But Beardy wasn't a very good Presbyterian, and he didn't care that it was sacrilege to play cards on the Sabbath. He shouted instead, "I'll play until doomsday if I want. Now get out of the room." And so the servant scooted out, and the night grew darker, and a hound bayed in the distance, and the wind picked up until it became a low moan outside the castle walls. And the game continued. At 5 minutes to midnight, the servant came in again, warning them about the approach of the Sabbath, and Beardy roared, "I'll play with the devil himself till doomsday if I want. Be gone!" And he stamped his feet and threw the dice in his hand, and the fire snapped and popped. And at the stroke of midnight, of course there was a knock on the door, and the servant ushered in a tall stranger dressed in black who asked to join the game. Beardy said, "Depends on what you have to play with." And this stranger sat down and placed several large glowing rubies on the table. They certainly didn't object to the company of this man with his magnificent rubies. The three men began playing, and the fire crackled and the dice rattled, and the servants huddled around the door outside. Soon the two earls began to argue around a bet. Their voices grew louder and louder, and then they stopped abruptly. When the servants peered into the room, they saw the two men engulfed in flames, and the stranger was gone. For many years, and our guide told us this too, the sounds of stomping and swearing and dice rattling have been heard from that room, where the Earl of Beardy is said to have cursed God and gambled with the devil. The room was sealed in an attempt to halt the haunting, but Beardy's ghost with a straggly beard still appears at Glamis Castle.
Oh,
and that's what gets me about Scotland. Some of these castles are just riddled with ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
I take it as my thing, because I don't like just people telling me there's a ghost. I want to know why the ghost is there. Who's behind that ghost? What was the story? But I thought that was a good story with this particular castle.
Now, I found it interesting that historically in Scotland, green is an unlucky color. And I thought, that's amazing to me. I wonder how that became an unlucky color, because in Ireland, it's a lovely color. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with green. I mean, look at all the green that's in the landscape of Scotland. But I find it interesting how certain things are adopted. Now, is the attitude about green still prevalent? I mean, do the Scots refuse to wear green?
I didn't notice it. And if you think of some of their tartans, they're
green.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I think they still do wear it. It's just, in those days, maybe green was considered unlucky with the white ladies and the gray ladies, and they had green ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Green was probably a color that everybody knew. It was a basic color way back.
Yes.
And so maybe it wasn't one of the colors that was made up to dye. So maybe that's how it came about.
And, of course, the Scots, like the Irish, believe very strongly in the sight and the fairy world. And they have all of their fascinating stories. And that, I think, creates a magic. I think of Disney when he did Darby O'Gill and the Little People, and how people absolutely, of course that was Irish, but they just absolutely love it. And this is a very much a part of the history of the Scots. There was an association with nature that they had. Now, I know that you're a fascinating lady. You've got all of these wonderful books, and you've got information on the fairy flag of Dunvegan Castle. You have all kinds of stories, like about the black dog, which was the precursor for the Hound of Baskerville with Sherlock Holmes. There's just so many wonderful, wonderful stories that are historically accurate, and it's fascinating how they evolved into the psyche of people on so many different levels through the writings of so many different people.
Mm.
Your book, Scottish Ghosts, Ashley Rooney has been my guest. Now, I know you don't have your own website, Ashley.
Right.
But people can find any of your materials on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. They go into the bookstores, and it's all there. Before we close out today, is there anything special that you would like to say about Scotland, its wonderful stories and legends, and what you would like to leave with my listeners today?
I think if you're Scottish, one of the things that I found totally mystical was going to the battle site of Culloden, which was a horrible, horrible battle. And the aftermath was even worse. And that's when so many Scottish people came to this country. The plain there is filled with ghosts. And what got to me, I like to garden, as many of us do. The heather, which grows there at Culloden, will never grow over the graves of the Jacobites there. And the flower, which we know here in the United States as Sweet William, refers to the William of Marlborough, the Duke of Cumberland, who was the guy who absolutely defeated the English and who was so brutal. And the Irish and Scots refer to that flower, which we know as Sweet William, as Stinking Billy. What I like about the Scots is they maintain their sense of humor. They've gone through real horrors, but they know you got to stand up and fight the day again and maybe have a smile on your face and figure out another way to go.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff. Scottish ghosts. If you have a legacy with this, if you want to travel to this beautiful country and meet these wonderful people whose history Oh my goodness, it just makes you weep. Yet we need to understand history, and I think that their stories, their legends, their fairy people, their seers, all of this makes you aware that there is a cultural legacy that is very alive even today. And Ashley Rooney has done a marvelous job of capturing this. Ashley, it's been a delight. I know you're going to be on with me again because you're always out there traveling and exploring and researching. And you have a love of ghosts, which I think is
next
awesome.
Next time, Irish. Thank you, yes. Donna. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, Ashley. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
An avatar is coming to the Seattle area. Lovingly known as Yogi Raj, he will be doing these upcoming events. Saturday, August 25th, 6 to 8 p.m., Healing and Enlightenment Workshop. This is free, an interactive event. Donations accepted. Location, Asian Resource Center, 1025 South King Street, Seattle, Washington, 98104. Tuesday, August 28th. Yogi Raj will be teaching and sharing his knowledge in a very special class at the Ascension Into Life Foundation. Visit ascensionintolifefoundation.org for more details. Friday, August 31st to Monday, September 3rd, Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji Retreat with Yogi Raj. Location, Fort Warden, Port Townsend. Each of these events will offer you the opportunity to learn about the ancient Himalayan knowledge for self-mastery called Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji. For more information, visit sidhanath.org. You can register for the event through northwestevents.eventbrite.com or call for reservations 909-907-9605.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Oh, my goodness. I want to thank those of you that came out to the Renaissance Fair. I was just so delighted to meet you, and it's just a wonderful experience. And boy, we've been cooking the first 2 weekends of the event, and I came across this poem and I thought, oh man, this really is. And with this poem, there's a backdrop. There's a photo here of this gigantic clear glass pitcher that is filled with lemonade and just a touch of mint. And it's just so cooling and beautiful to look at. And I thought, oh, this would have been so awesome, hot weekends. And this is how the poem read. It says, on summer days, I find the shade and bring a glass of lemonade. Here, my finest summer plans are made. And that's by Kelly St. Ives. Wow, this photograph just captured it all. And it is, you know, it's a time of year where I know we'll complain about the heat and all of this, but to enjoy the beauty of the sunshine. And one of my favorite times of the day, of course, I'm a morning person, is when I watch the sunrise in the morning and I see the sun coming through, the light coming through the trees and the way the colors play and the golden hues of the sun, sometimes the pinks and the reds come in, and it just is a magnificent, magnificent canvas of beauty. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we're already into fall. That's right. That's hard to believe. We didn't really have much of a summer this year. But fall has already started. The trees have turned color. So we're well on our way, but we are getting an Indian summer that I think is just going to be spectacular. Now, by the way, telephone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6224.
888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, I'm so delighted you're able to join our listening family. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and after that, I will give you my perceptions of what I see evolving around you, and then you will be able to ask a question, one question about anything that you like. I want to share a quote with you by Brian Tracy, and I really like it, and I think it's a great way to begin a week, and this is how it goes. No one lives long enough to learn everything they need to learn starting from scratch. To be successful, we absolutely, positively have to find people who have already paid the price to learn the things that we need to learn to achieve our goals. Now, let me read that last part. To be successful, we absolutely, positively have to find people who have already paid the price to learn the things that we need to learn to achieve our goals. That is important. And I think of the people that I have met through the years, and many times it's been through a book. I think of Napoleon Hill. I think of the Ruth Montgomerys, the Jean Dixons. I mean, the people that wrote about Edgar Casey. There's so many aspects of history. I mean, there are literally, to be perfectly honest, hundreds if not thousands of people that have had an impact just on my life through the written word. And then you meet those individuals in real life that represent the qualities and the standards that you yourself want to emulate. And if you're willing to listen to them and learn from them, they don't know it all, nobody ever does, it's going to save you a great deal of time. And I think that not just time, but effort, energy, and sometimes a great deal of money. It is important to be open to learning. And so often, we feel like we don't have anybody around us that we can talk to or that we can ask questions of. Ask other people. That's what I did when I found myself experiencing things in dreams that were so terrifying to me. What I did, I talked to my best friend. She didn't understand, but she said, oh, we've got this new member of family. Let me talk to her. And then talk to her, and she said, oh, I have this neighbor. Now, in a million years on my own, I would never have met my mentor, Gloria. But because of sharing with someone, then someone else may know something else. You go on and on and on, and it's a ripple effect. And eventually, you may find yourself having the opportunity to learn from someone whose wisdom and years of living and experience are going to empower you. And it is, you're going to have to ask questions of them. You have to test the waters. And yes, there are going to be times you're going to be disappointed, and you're going to find that there are those that are the frauds and the liars and the hypocrites. But more often than not, you're going to find people, good people. They may never have a title. They could work at a local post office or be the garbage guy. Wisdom comes in all kinds of forms and through all kinds of people. The key is being willing to learn and being open. No matter what your age, be willing to learn. Brian Tracy's thoughts, I think, were very good to share, and I'm glad that we're able to do that this morning. It's a fabulous day. This is your life, and you want to make sure that whatever you do, you're going to be able to have a life that's going to be rich enough that you're going to be able to share it with others. Oh, speaking of sharing, I had promised you that I was going to share a recipe, an orange cream angel food cake. Now, this angel food cake is marvelous. This, it's especially if you're trying to watch calories and you want something that's on the sweet side, this is a fabulous way to make something very plain that to just taste absolutely marvelous. If you love the flavor of orange, this is a cake, especially during the hot months, that is going to be just wonderful. All you need for the cake, get yourself a prepackaged mix. If you don't want to make it from scratch, prepackaged mix, fix it, bake it, that's all it is. Now, this is what you're going to need for the rest. Now, you are going to need 1 1/4 cups of cold water. Nope, excuse me. That goes in with the angel food cake mix. Wrong. This is what you need for the cream, because this is what makes this taste so spectacular. For your orange cream, you're going to need 6 egg yolks, 1 cup of sugar, 2 teaspoons of cornstarch, 2/3 cup of orange juice, 1 pinch of salt, 3/4 cup of butter, and you need to cut that into little pieces. You're going to need 1 cup of heavy cream, 1 tablespoon of grated orange zest, and you want to use the fresh orange zest if you can. If you don't want to do that, the flavor is not going to be as significant if you use the pre-dried. You want to get that orange oil that comes naturally in the skin of the orange. So you need 1 tablespoon of the zest. And then you're going to perhaps want to take one of the peelers and just make very, very tiny slivers of the orange, outer orange zest. And you just want it very, very thin, very, very tiny. So if you have a peeler and you go and you do it, you don't want any of the white because the white is bitter. You just want to get that orange strip. And then take a knife and cut it into very, very fine strips. Or even better, if you can get candied orange strips and cut it very, very finely with a knife that is dipped in sugar, oh, that's going to be wonderful as a topping. But that's optional. You don't have to do it. Okay. You've got your angel food cake mix. So what you want to do, because it's going to take a bit of time for that angel food cake to cool, you want to take a 2-quart pot. You want to put your egg yolks, sugar, cornstarch, orange juice, and salt. And you want to whisk that. And if you're like me and you're lazy, put it all in the blender, push the button, and then you got it. Put it into the 2-quart pot. Like I told you, sometimes I get really lazy. I want things easier. You're going to add your butter that's been put, cut into small pieces. And you want to put the entire liquid into or over a medium heat, and you want to stir it all the time until it starts to boil. Then you're going to boil this mixture for about 3 to 5 minutes until it's thickened, and you'll know that it's at the right consistency when you dip a spoon into it and you take it out, and the mixture coats the back of the spoon smoothly. Then you know that it is ready. You immediately pour the orange mixture. It's called an orange curd. That's right. You're creating an orange curd through a fine mesh strainer into a medium bowl. You're going to cover with plastic wrap, and you want to put the plastic wrap on top of the surface of the orange curd, and then you're going to put it in the refrigerator. And you let it cool until it's totally chilled. In a medium bowl, you're going to beat your cream on high speed until you get stiff peaks. You fold in the whipped cream and the grated orange zest into your cold orange curd. So this is something you can fix ahead of time. Now, when you remove your cake, you're going to put it on the serving plate that you want to serve it on. And you take a long, sharp knife. You cut off the top third of the cake. You put that to the side. Then you're going to scoop out a 1-inch wide and a 1-inch deep tunnel around the inside of the cake. And you set up the scooped out cake. You put that to the side because you can use it for something else. And then you're going to spoon 1 1/3 cups of your orange cream curd into the tunnel. You put the top of the cake back on to seal the filling. And you frost the top and the side of the cake with your remaining orange cream. And you want to refrigerate it a minimum of 2 hours before you serve it. But I'll tell you what, if you fix this the night before you're going to have a party or whenever you're going to serve this, let those flavors go into the angel food cake. Yum. Oh, it's so good. And then, if you like, before you serve it, now this has to be stored in the refrigerator. Before you serve it, put the candied orange peel on the top. Yum. Really, really good. Great for summer. Refreshing. It's a light dessert. Oh, but it's so good. You could also do this with lemon. And if you're lazy, you could use lemon curd instead. That's right. You go to the store, you can buy the lemon curd. You could make it with lemon if you wanted. Just adapt the recipe a little bit. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking with Chris Grizas. Now, we're going to be talking about innovation. This is something that is so vitally important always. We need those people that can come together, can create new things, new balance, and it's always a challenge. How do you make a team of people work together harmoniously? How can you keep that innovative spirit going? Well, tomorrow we're going to talk to Chris and find out. He's written a book called The Innovative Team that I think you're going to find extremely interesting. On Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Lou Paradise, and we're going to be talking about health factors. And boy, I'll tell you, I talked with some people at the Ren Fair, and we'll share some of that on Wednesday, that when they found that there was a way of dealing with pain and certain things that were going on in their life, they were just ecstatic. Passing information on is great, and Lou is so knowledgeable, so we're going to be sharing that with you, and then we're going to be talking with a marvelous woman. Her name is Gatoud Matshi. This is a woman who was born in Africa, who surpassed any dreams that her parents might have even had for her success. She came from poverty, and this woman is not only innovative, but she's a multimillionaire. We're going to talk about her journey and how she was able to overcome phenomenal obstacles. Her book is called Born on the Continent, and then on Friday, Mark Twain, a beloved author that is even more popular today than he was when he was alive. Phenomenal man, and Ira Fisterolf is going to give us information about Mark Twain that very few people know about. This is a historian that is going to share some details of his life that I think you'll find interesting. So a dynamic, diverse group of guests this week, and I hope you'll be able to join me. And be sure to tell your friends about the Donna Sebo Show, because we always have such fascinating people. I love to let them share their story with you. Innovation. This is part of the American soul. When I was in Russia in the early 90s, 1992 in fact, and I was doing interviews over there, there was an attorney that said to me after I'd done this particular interview with him, he said, you Americans believe you have the right to freedom. And I thought, this is very interesting for someone to say. And he said of his culture, the Russian spirit, the Russian soul, he said, the Americans feel like they have the right to freedom, the right of choice, all of this. And it's in their very soul. And he said, the Russians, we don't have that in our soul. We don't feel that we have a right to do that. And when I thought about that, it stayed in my mind so strongly. What a wonderful thing to have that passion, to believe in that. But that's what our forefathers fought for, our ancestors. So many people that came to this country were indentured servants. They came from Scotland. They came from Ireland. They came from England. England dumped, sent people to the United States out of their prison
said, here, let me send you, we're going to send you the garbage of what we've got in England. And it was those people, and they were not garbage. Those people that found that even though they were indentured service, black, white, yellow, green, purple, it didn't make any difference, they were able to make choices in their life. And that's where history is so important to study. Well, there's a young woman, and her name is Beth Howard. She's in Iowa, right there in the heart of this wonderful nation of ours. And this is a woman who lost her husband at the age of 43. And she just was devastated by this. She didn't know what she was going to do. And when I learned a pie, P-I-E, that's right, a pie, turned her life around. Now, how did that happen? How could a simple pie turn around? Well, it was association with the Iowa State Fair. They put on phenomenal pie contests, and she was familiar with that part of the country. She was going through her own memory banks, as so many do when they're grieving, thinking, what can I do? Where can I go? So there was a drawback to something that she had known that represented a simpler kind of a lifestyle. And she just decided, okay, I will check this out. And she made an application into the fair's website, and she was invited to be a judge of a pie contest. Life has interesting twists and turns, doesn't it? And her motto is, the world always needs more pies. But she, after the fair ended, she went out to where she had been raised, which is Ottumwa, O-T-T-U-M-W-A. That's where she was born and raised. Now, she had been away from Iowa for a lot of years, and she said there was a sign that caught her eye. It said, American Gothic House, 6 miles. Now, there is a very famous painting of a farmer and his wife in front of a house by Grant Wood. And that's the farmer in the overalls holding a pitchfork and a woman in an apron by his side. And she had no idea that the actual house that was in the painting was so close to where she had grown up. Well, she found it. The house, and I've got a picture of it in front of me, it is just as it was in that painting. It has not changed. And it's rented out, but nobody had been in this house for 2 years. And she said there was a voice she heard inside her head, this house has been waiting for you. This is where you're meant to be. She told her story and decided that she was going to go in the pie-making business. She makes peach, apple, blueberry, strawberry, rhubarb, and whatever else is in season. She said the vent holes in the crust are in the shape of a pitchfork. And she started Pitchfork Pie Stand. That's how she got the name. And she said, I've got a whole new business. Life has a fascinating way of turning around something that seems to be so sad and so dark and bringing in a light you never would have expected. Pies did it. They did it for Beth Howard. And she smiles every day. And she shares that smile with everybody she meets. Remember always that you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And like Beth, you may have some hard times you go through, but by golly, there's going to be something sweet somewhere in the picture that if you're wise enough to listen, may open up a whole new life for you. Life is meant to be lived, not just existed within. Have a fabulous day. Talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.